Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 462, titled Fifth Column, Part 3, The Subversion of Operation Green Quest. This is being recorded on May 30th of the year 2004. Before I begin, let me remind you that sister station WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older programs available for download only, also on Real Audio, at a longer URL linked to both the www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery website and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. Spitfire List is one word. Within a week or so of the airing of this program, there will be a detailed, annotated, article-length description of For the Record 462 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. Listeners who only use the on-air material are strongly encouraged to take advantage of the written descriptions. Not only do they provide one with hard copy that can be examined at greater length, but in addition, the descriptions often include material that I did not have time to include in the original broadcast, obviously for reasons of limitation of time. So please do take advantage of the written descriptions. They're an invaluable resource. Spitfire stocks the various lectures and programs I've done over the years. You can reach them at P.O. Box 1179. That's in Ben Lomond, California. Capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip 95005. Email is mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. Be aware that there's now a search function on the Spitfire website to help listeners locate particular subjects, and also the vitally important text Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile by the late heroic Paul Manning is available for download for free on the Spitfire website, along with a thumbnail bio of Paul Manning and some excerpts from the book. So please take advantage of that. Now, this program, again titled Fifth Column, Part 3, The Subversion of Operation Green Quest, is a supplement to a number of different programs, in particular For the Record program number 405 and 433. What we're going to be doing is developing a line of inquiry that I've been investigating for some time, namely the deliberate subversion of attempts not only at blocking the 9/11 attacks, but also, in particular, of investigating the money trail to the Al-Qaeda and related organizations' coffers. Basically, Operation Green Quest is the code name for the operation aimed at interdicting funding sources for Al-Qaeda and related groups. It has been subverted, and we're going to take a look at that subversion. We're going to take a look in particular at indications that the structural economic relationships between powerful people in the Bush administration and the GOP and some of their counterparts in the power elites of some of the Middle Eastern oil kingdoms, Saudi Arabia in particular, have led that those connections have precipitated the deliberate subversion of Operation Green Quest. In particular, the raids of March 20th, 2002, conducted under Green Quest, led to not only elements that overlap the GOP and the Republican Party, but in particular that overlap at one level the Al-Qaeda and Hamas funding organization, and also the Al-Taqwa group as well. The net effect here is that what we're looking at is quite literally a fifth column within the United States. In the deep background, one finds the underground Reich, but in the more immediate scenarios, I guess one could say, or in the more immediate vistas would be a better term, one finds the structural economic relationships between the petroleum industry, the Bush administration, the Republican Party, and the power elites of the Middle Eastern oil kingdoms. We're going to go into that material. And we're going to take a look also at some interesting questions concerning some of the anomalies with regard to the aerial intercept phenomena on September 11th of 2001. A number of people have taken note of the performance of U.S. fighter aircraft on that date. I tend to think, in fact, not I tend to think, but I do think that a great many people have exaggerated or misunderstood some of the aspects concerning the performance of fighter aircraft and also the FAA on that date. But nonetheless, for reasons, by the way, explained and for the record, 459 and 460. But nonetheless, there are some interesting questions. And one of the things we're going to take a look at concerns the fact that a company called PTEC, which has as one of its primary funding people, one of its primary financial backers, Yassin Qadi, fingered as a backer of Al-Qaeda, and also a fellow named Yaqub Mirza. PTEC, again, a high-tech company in Massachusetts, has produced software for the Air Force, for the Department of Defense, for the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, and for the FBI, among other institutions. And that raises some very interesting questions about the performance of the FAA and also fighter aircraft on September 11th, 2001. We're going to begin by taking a look at an article that was published in the Financial Times of London this past week, specifically on May 25th of 2004. A number of newspapers carried reports of a study that was produced by a British intelligence-related think tank called the International Institute for Strategic Studies. This study has indicated that Al-Qaeda has experienced a resurgence worldwide, in part because of the tremendous value from a recruiting standpoint of the Iraqi incursion, and also due to the fact that insufficient use of troops on the ground in Afghanistan has actually scattered Al-Qaeda abroad, whereas they were more or less concentrated in one particular geographic location. Now they are scattered. But perhaps the most important aspect of this study concerns an item that was omitted from all of the American publications that carry this particular story. Only the Financial Times of London of May 25, 2004, of the papers I've read, carried this particular item. This article is titled, Al-Qaeda May Have 18,000 Operatives. That's by Mark Huband, H-U-B-A-N-D, and David Buchan, B-U-C-H-A-N. And again from the FT of 5/25/2004. This reads, the Al-Qaeda terrorist network is a, quote, viable and effective, unquote, organization that may be able to call on as many as 18,000 potential operatives worldwide, a UK think tank said on Tuesday. And this next part is the element that was omitted from all of the American articles published on this story. In its annual strategic survey, the International Institute for Strategic Studies says Al-Qaeda's financial network has survived largely intact, and that the war in Iraq has brought new recruits to its ranks. None of the American stories that I saw reported on this particular study mentioned that the Al-Qaeda funding structure has remained intact. We've spoken about that at considerable length on this broadcast, and we're going to go into it at greater length on this program, and specifically the role of this fifth column, composed of various elements, not only the American GOP petroleum industry axis, but also their counterparts in Saudi Arabia, and in the background, underground Reich elements. In particular, I'm very interested in Karl Rove, whom I suspect is quite literally the pivot man for the underground Reich's position in this administration. But we're not going to be taking a look at Karl Rove directly in this broadcast. What we are going to be looking at are the business relationships, the structural economic relationships that exist between the Bush family, the GOP, and their Saudi counterparts, and how this spawned institutions like the Islamic Institute of Grover Norquist, the Wahhabi Al-Qaeda / Al-Taqwa link to the Republican Party, and the implications of this for not only America's policies vis-a-vis counterterror, but in particular the subversion of Operation Green Quest. There has been an FBI translator who is being actively suppressed by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. This is a woman named Sybil Edmonds, and she had produced a number of warnings that had come from various intelligence assets around the world talking about the impending attacks in the United States, and the volume of warnings that were coming in was absolutely legion. One of the things that Sybil Edmonds noted, and we're not going to focus on that past a point in this particular discussion, but she noted that a number of drug smugglers had maintained that they had apparently, by their own account anyway, brought in some of the operatives used in September 11th. That is not only disturbing in and of itself, because the links between organized crime and international terrorism have proved relatively difficult to penetrate, but also in the book Serpent's Walk that I've used so many times on this program, the terrorist elements that ultimately wind up laying waste to much of the United States and paving the way for an underground Reich takeover infiltrate the U.S. through some of the drug smuggling routes. Sybil Edmonds is being muzzled by the FBI, and we're going to talk a little bit about her background, and we're going to talk about her analysis of why she is being muzzled and some of the elements that lie in the background. This article was authored by James Ridgway of The Village Voice. It's from his Mondo Washington column of May 25th, 2004. This column is titled, "This Made Ashcroft Gag." Subtitle, "Translator Keeps Blowing 9/11 Whistle on FBI. U.S. Keeps Shutting Her Up." Skipping down, we read of Sybil Edmonds. Edmonds said she had heard the details of the Afghan asset story in an unclassified meeting at the Capitol, but she cannot talk about the specifics because of a Justice Department gag order that classifies as secret what she has to say. Parenthetically, this is a warning from an FBI asset in Afghanistan who warned that there was a major terror attack using aircraft that was scheduled for later that year of course being 2001. Now, note in particular, because this is a key to much of what follows, speaking of Sybil Edmonds, James Ridgway writes, she said, however, that, quote, "There are a lot of activities in the U.S., a lot of money, and these activities involve money laundering, drugs, a support network for terrorism, people in high places, people in the political arena," unquote, of the muzzling of Sybil Edmonds, and we're going to take that up later. Edmonds can't tell what she may know because Attorney General John Ashcroft recently invoked an arcane law to make her statements, quote, classified, unquote, including previously public statements and journalism quoting her on the case. At a Senate Judiciary hearing, at a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing last week, Republican Chuck Grassley of Iowa summarized the Edmonds case in questioning FBI Director Robert Mueller, quote, "I would also like to, on a second point, figure out why the FBI is going back in time and classifying some pretty basic information that's already in the public sector in regard to classification of information that we have received in Congress from a whistleblower, Sybil Edmonds. We have, for instance, an email sent out by the chairman's office last week saying that the FBI is classifying two-year-old information that the committee got in two previous briefings. Ms. Edmonds worked for the FBI as a translator and was fired after she reported problems. As part of the committee's legitimate oversight, we looked into that. The email I have is right here, and so I'm very alarmed with the after-the-fact classification. On the one hand, I think it's ludicrous because I understand that almost all of this information is in the public domain and has been made very widely available. On the other hand, this classification is very serious because it seems like the FBI would be attempting to put a gag order on Congress," unquote. Grassley added again, quoting, "I don't think this is really about national security. If it were, the FBI would have done this a very long time ago. And in fact, you'd be trying to get information back that's already been given to us about Ms. Edmonds." Well, I would suggest that basically this is part of a larger phenomenon that we're going to examine, in which powerful people are being protected, and that if the structural economic relationships between the Bush administration, the fossil fuels industry, the GOP, and the Saudi power elite, including elements that have been actively funding Al-Qaeda and Hamas, if that became public, it would not only lead to the defenestration of this particular administration, but if these leads were properly pursued, it could lead to the indictment of key elements of the Bush administration for treason. And don't expect that to happen anytime soon. Nonetheless, as I indicated in a number of past broadcasts, I think that what is taking place in the United States right now is analogous to what took place in France prior to and during the early stage of World War II, that there is literally a civil war, which in turn is part of a larger struggle. The civil war York basically is between sincerely patriotic and democratic elements with a small d, and this fifth column that is actively subverting the United States. And again, that civil war, I believe, manifesting itself in the intelligence and law enforcement communities, is in turn part of a larger struggle in which the United States is being actively attacked from without by underground Reich elements using Islamist elements as proxy warriors, and also involving some actual underground Reich operatives. In turn, This attack from without is being accompanied by subversion from within. Numerous broadcasts that I've done have spoken about the subversion of France prior to and during World War II. In particular, For the Record program 372, 412, and 441. What we're going to be looking at for the duration of the broadcast concerns the structural economic relationships between the Bush administration, the fossil fuels industry, their counterparts in Saudi Arabia, who some of whom at least appear to be actively funding al-Qaeda. And again, from the Financial Times of London of May 25th, in its annual strategic survey, the International Institute for Strategic Studies says al-Qaeda's financial network has survived largely intact. And quoting from the Village Voice, Mondo Washington column of that same day, Sybil Edmonds said, quote, "There are a lot of activities in the U.S., a lot of money, and these activities involve money laundering, drugs, a support network for terrorism, people in high places, people in the political arena." And we're going to take a look at some of those people in just a couple of minutes. More about the subversion of Operation Green Quest. Research credit on the following article goes to a member of the listening audience. This is from Newsweek, and specifically this is from the MSNBC website. This is from Who's War on Terror? And I will give the full URL later on in the broadcast. This is an update of a story originally published on December 10th of 2003. This appears to have been updated on April 9th. While the U.S. military wages war in Iraq, the FBI and the new Department of Homeland Security are fighting their own fierce battle against each other. And again, I would stress that this is a literally within the intelligence community and law enforcement community. This is a civil war, which in turn is part of a larger war in which the U.S. is facing an attack from without by underground Reich elements and subversion from within by allied domestic elements. Again, from Newsweek, while the U.S. military wages war in Iraq, the FBI and the new Department of Homeland Security are fighting their own fierce battle against each other. The casus belli of this conflict is Operation Green Quest, the high-profile federal task force set up to target the financiers of al-Qaeda and other international terrorist groups. Ever since Green Quest was created by former U.S. Customs Chief Robert Bonner just after the September 11th terror attacks, Green Quest agents have conducted some of the Bush administration's best publicized and most controversial terrorist finance cases, including a series of raids against the offices of Islamic charities in Washington, in the Washington area last year, that drew strong protests from American Muslim and civil rights groups, and in particular, I would add parenthetically, from elements associated with the Bush administration, because it was those elements that wound up getting targeted to a certain extent by these raids. Continuing. But as the Green Quest team made headlines, its investigations triggered a bitter dispute within the government. Internally, FBI officials have derided Green Quest agents as a bunch of cowboys, unquote, whose actions have undermined more important, long-range FBI investigations into terrorist financing. Green Quest sources in turn accuse the FBI of jealousy. Now that the customs-led Green Quest operation has been folded into the new Homeland Security Department, Newsweek has learned, the FBI and its parent agency, the Justice Department, have demanded that the White House instead give the FBI total control over Green Quest. One senior law enforcement official called the lack of coordination between the FBI and Green Quest, quote, an intolerable situation, unquote, and noted that the Bureau, not Homeland Security, has been formally designated by President Bush as the lead agency, unquote, for terrorism investigations. Again, quoting, you can't have two lead agencies, unquote, conducting terror cases, the official said. The FBI justice move, pushed by Department of Justice Criminal Division Chief Michael Chertoff and Deputy Attorney General Larry Thompson, has enraged Homeland Security officials, however. They accuse the Bureau of sabotaging GreenQuest investigations by failing to turn over critical information to their agents and trying to obscure a decade-long record of lethargy in which FBI offices failed to aggressively pursue terror finance cases. Quote, "They, the FBI, won't share anything with us," unquote, said a Homeland Security official, again quoting, "Then they go to the White House and they accuse us of not sharing. If they can't take it over, they want to kill it," unquote. If nothing else, the battle over GreenQuest illustrates the bureaucratic tensions that still plague the war on terror. The creation of the Homeland Security Department was supposed to put an end to such turf fights. The new department took over a diverse assortment of federal agencies that had various responsibilities for combating terrorism, including the Customs Service, the Immigration and Naturalization Service, and the U.S. Border Patrol. But even while the White House was preaching cooperation, the various agencies that were being folded into Homeland Security were squabbling with the FBI, the behemoth in the domestic war on terror. One prime example of the tension is the investigation into PTEC, the Boston-area computer software firm that had millions of dollars in sensitive government contracts with the Air Force, the Energy Department, and, ironically enough, the FBI. In addition, I would note parenthetically, in addition to the Air Force, it also had sensitive software contracts with the Federal Aviation Administration as well. Note that for discussion on side two. Continuing. In what turned into a minor embarrassment for the Bureau, the firm's main investors included Yassin Qadi, a wealthy Saudi businessman whom the Bush administration had formally designated a terrorist financier under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. Al-Qadi has vigorously denied any connection to terrorism. The PTEC case turned into an ugly dispute last year when company whistleblowers told GreenQuest agents about their own suspicions about the firm's owners. Sources close to the case say those same whistleblowers had first approached FBI agents, but the Bureau apparently did little or nothing in response. With backing from the National Security Council, GreenQuest agents then mounted a full-scale investigation that culminated in a raid on the company's office last December. After getting wind of the GreenQuest probe, the FBI stepped in and unsuccessfully tried to take control of the case. The result, sources say, has been something of a train wreck. Privately, FBI officials say GreenQuest agents botched the probe and jeopardized other more promising inquiries into Al-Qadi. GreenQuest agents dismiss the charges and say the problem is that the Bureau was slow to respond to legitimate allegations that an outside contractor with terrorist ties may have infiltrated government computers. Again, this last sentence. GreenQuest agents dismiss the charges and say the problem is that the Bureau was slow to respond to legitimate allegations that an outside contractor with terrorist ties may have infiltrated government computers. Whatever the truth, there is no dispute that the case has so far produced no charges and indictments against Al-Qadi or anyone else connected with PTEC. The company has denied wrongdoing. By the way, I would add that in our last program, we took a look at the continuing case against Yassin Al-Qadi. Again, the government agencies with whom PTEC had sensitive software contracts included the Air Force, the Federal Aviation Administration, and the FBI. In connection with the FBI's recalcitrant attitude, something that, by the way, predates Robert Mueller, and we're going to talk about FBI collaboration with the Saudi milieu implicated, among other things, in funding Al-Qaeda prior to Mueller's stay on at the Bureau. I want to note something that I took note of in For the Record 310 and also in a number of the programs dealing directly with September 11th, including For the Record 424, and that is that in the summer of 2001, Robert Mueller was made director of the FBI. And Robert Mueller had been a U.S. attorney in charge of a number of different cases, which, had they been properly investigated, and they weren't, would have implicated not only the elder George Bush and some of the Iran-Contra and Iraqgate-related activities, but also would have ultimately gone to the milieu that linked the younger George Bush to the Saudi power elite and the milieu of the BCCI. And in particular, it was the BCCI investigation that was headed up by Robert Mueller and pursued in a, shall we say, less than vigorous and effective fashion that would have not only resulted in the indictment of the elder George Bush and a fuller, more full disclosure of the Iran-Contra and Iraqgate affairs, but also, through the investigation into the BCCI milieu, James R. Bath, the milieu of Harkin Energy, Spectrum 7, and Arbusto Energy, it would have gone to the younger George Bush's connections to people like the bin Laden family and Salem bin Laden, and also Khalid bin Mahfouz. And it is those structural economic relationships with both political and commercial components that I believe lie at the foundation of the recalcitrance of the FBI. And I suggested in For the Record 310, again recorded on July 8th of 2001, that the appointment of Robert Mueller to head up the FBI was in all probability directed at blocking the unraveling of some of these investigations. By the way, the number two man, the U.S. attorney who was the number two man in the BCCI investigation, was Rudy Giuliani, who was mayor of New York City on September 11th of 2001. The last attorney general, by the way, under whose supervision both Giuliani and Robert Mueller worked, was William Barr, who was a quote ex-unquote CIA officer who, quote, left, unquote, the agency when a bunch of its operations people were dismissed by Admiral Stansfield Turner, who was appointed by Jimmy Carter to clean out CIA. So on this side, summing up what we've looked at, we took a look at the fact that the Al-Qaeda funding apparatus has not been interdicted. We took a look at FBI whistleblower Sybil Edmonds' charges that people in high places, people with political connections, and people connected to terrorist financing were involved in the stifling of her attempts at blowing the whistle. We took a look, too, at the war between Homeland Security and the FBI, and we took a look at indications that the FBI has been less than vigorous in pursuing Operation Green Quest, in fact, that they've been sitting on the operation. And last, we took a look at the fact that Yassin Al-Qadi, and it was one of the primary financiers of the P-TECH company, which held sensitive software contracts with, among other institutions, the United States Air Force, and, as we shall see, the Federal Aviation Administration as well. We're going to continue to look into this fifth column, again, conducting what at a domestic level is literally a civil war within the intelligence community and the law enforcement community, and that civil war in turn is part of a broader conflict, a struggle between the U.S. and the underground Reich, a struggle that we are losing, and a struggle that if it is not successfully resolved is going to result in the subversion, the complete subversion of democracy worldwide, and the triumph of darkness. However, we will be talking about that inside too. Spitfire stocks all of the shows I've done over the years, as well as the lectures, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. There'll be a detailed annotated article-length description of For the Record program number 462 in the Spitfire in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website within a week or so of the airing of the show. Do note that the descriptions often contain information that is not contained in the original broadcast. Also, for listeners who've inquired about how they can assist the work that I'm doing, there is a page to click on at the beginning of each For the Record description, which will take people to a page that will instruct them about how to assist, okay? Note that the Spitfire website now has a search function. Note that Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile is now available on the Spitfire website for download for free. Note also that WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent shows streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older shows available for download only at a longer address linked to both at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website as well. This concludes side one of For the Record program number 462, fifth column, part three, the subversion of Operation Green Quest. This is being recorded on May 30th of the year 2004. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.